When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. My name is Barry Cassidy and I will be your host for this week's show. The debate as to whether or not February is the start of spring may be settled by the weather at the moment, because between rain and snow, it certainly feels like winter. So I hope you're listening in from somewhere warm, because we've lots to bring you from the world of agriculture this week. First up, it's almost a year to the day since COVID-19 changed everything, and it continues to dominate our lives. Anna Donoghue caught up with Professor Luke O'Neill to hear his take on farmers, their immune system, and the fight against COVID.
Very first vaccine, yes, was this guy Edward Jenner, but there was a guy called Jesty, Benjamin Jesty, who was a farmer.
Yeah.
And there was an old wives' tale anyway, going around for 100 years, that milkmaids didn't get smallpox. And that was kind of well known as a folk type thing.
Yeah.
And milkmaids were famous for smooth skin, you see, because they were getting all the pock marks. And Jesty, he tried it first. So this is the strange part. He took some cowpox blister off a woman, milkmaid, gave it to someone, and then said there was evidence of stopping smallpox. But the trouble is, he didn't do it as extensively or as rigorously, should we say, as Jenner. So Jenner was the first to do a real trial. And he got this milkmaid called Sarah Nelms. This is on my podcast, man. If you listen to this week's podcast. So Sarah Nelms is her name, right? She was a milkmaid. He took a blister from her, some pus off a blister from her, gave it to a boy called James Phipps, okay? And then didn't give him smallpox, but gave him, it gets a bit complicated, already. There was evidence, if you take fluid off a smallpox person and give that to someone else, that can protect them. But they get a bit of it, they get a few symptoms because they're given a bit of smallpox. He gave that to James Phipps, didn't get any symptoms. And he thought, oh, this must be preventing then smallpox from harming people, you know. And then he did a trial with maybe 11 people, I think, in the end. His own baby. Can you believe it? That's how confident he was. And they were all protected, right? And then they begin to use it widely in England. But it's true. It begins on a farm with Jesty. Now, Jenner becomes famous then. And he gets loads of money off the UK, the government, to reward him and all that. And Napoleon said he was a great guy. The Empress of Russia sent him a diamond. And he said that. Now, Jesty begins to resent this.
Of course.
And he contacts the Houses of Parliament. He goes, I need recognition. And they gave him a golden lancet. They gave him a special gift of a golden lancet. Isn't that amazing?
So he got something in the end.
He did in the end, yeah. But he was a bit sort of saying, that was my idea. You know, the other guy ripped me off.
And
which
even,
may be partly true, because Jesty's farm was near where Jenner was. So they're in Gloucestershire, I think, in England.
And even though it's a great story and all, and we don't know what's true and what's not, but is the essence of it in terms of farmers having good immune systems true, as in being exposed to dirt in the environments that they're
That's true as well.
Obviously the game has changed a bit with regard to being more hygienic now, but is that true that the more you're exposed to dirt, the more...
Definitely. And they've even done studies of putting people onto a farm for a month, say, and it will protect them against asthma later in life. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
So there's something in farms that protect people against allergy and asthma mainly, you know. And they call it the hygiene hypothesis. So a bit of dirt's good for you, basically.
Yeah.
It's probably something in the dung, really. There's some bacteria there that you're inhaling, you know. And if you get exposed to that, what happens there is, if you're young, especially if you're a child or a baby, actually, if your immune system is exposed to a bit of dirt, it teaches it how to tell friend from foe, you know. If you don't have that, you're going to be hyper sensitive then sometimes, and that's what allergy asthma is. You inhale something and you get a big allergic reaction, you know. So yeah, so being on a farm is good for you basically. And then secondly, outdoors is great, you know, fresh air helps, the sunlight, all those things, you know.
And you can read that full interview in this week's Irish Country Living. Another topic that's never too far from the headlines is Brexit. We're less than 2 months into our new reality, and we're already seeing the consequences of that fateful decision made back in 2015. Adam Wood spoke to our own Shane Murphy to find out who else might be staying home this spring.
Okay, I'm joined now by Shane Murphy, pedigree editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. Shane, you've been trying to find out some information from the Department of Agriculture on cattle exports, in particular pedigree exports to the UK, and you had a story online last week on farmersjournal.ie. Tell me a little bit about what you found out.
Yeah, I suppose we're a month into 2021 now, and we're only getting to grips with this. So what it is 40 days the animal has to come back to the breeder for if it goes to the mainland Great Britain. So as you probably know, it's Northern Ireland, it remains the same, but now if a UK buyer comes over at a pedigree sale and buys at that sale, then he has to go back with the breeder for 40 days. Obviously, this brings with it its own risk. It used to be export on day, and we used to get a vibrant trade for many of the societies.
So these customers are pretty important for the top-end stock. Like we've seen over the years, I guess, a couple of very high prices going across to the UK in terms of bulls. So this could really impact pedigree sales in the spring.
Yeah, they're a massive factor to it. I suppose we look at about at the big premier sales of the likes of the Charlie Limousine and Smintle, which it affect most, 20 to 30% of their animals are exported in a year. Now a certain percentage of them would be going to Northern Ireland, but there's still big numbers going to the mainland as well, and it varies between breed. But a lot of these boys aren't looking at the lesser quality animal, they're looking at the very, very top animal. So in many cases, it's the top prices for most of the breeds.
So what breeds, in your opinion, will be worst affected?
As I mentioned, I suppose it varies, but definitely you're talking about the Charlie, Limousine and Simmental from the pedigree point of view. They'd have the highest exports on any day, but the Limousine is probably, for me looking at it, is probably the biggest one that's affected for going to mainland UK. They always have a very good amount of buyers over looking at stock, selecting the top lots, and they also have a percentage of buyers that'll be buying kind of medium ground stock and going back and reselling them over across the water as well.
And there are some Irish breeders that would target that market in the use of the bulls that they use on their cows to try and capitalise on some of that market in the UK.
Definitely. It's a big money business over there. You can see just even last week when you see the likes of Willodge Posh Boys making 250,000, there's a lot of money invested over there, and Posh Boys is the result of an embryo sold out of Ireland, so a lot of the genetics over here would be aimed for that market. I don't think that's going to change. Like really, it's aiming to breed that top muscular animal for that market, and I think the boys that are in it for that won't change.
Obviously these animals were working out well for UK breeders because they kept coming back every year, so obviously Irish genetics and Irish animals were performing very well over in the UK.
Exceptional every year. Do you know, you go over every year and the top genetics are always across there. Just as I mentioned last week, there was Willodge Posh Boys at 250,000, but out of the top 12 prices, there was 7 of them with Irish relations, and that was across 3 or 4 different herds in Ireland. So it's not just a once-off, there's constantly doing them year in, year out, the Irish genetics.
So I suppose, where to from here? Do you think, is there any hope of getting this resolved? And will UK breeders come over to buy on farm? Because I take it, if a UK breeder came over and bought on farm, that means the 40-day residency rule has been already fulfilled, so they don't need to be held for another 40 days.
That's exactly it. So if they buy directly off farm, they can go straight across. Where that could come into effect, I suppose, is the breeder getting this true value if they're selling off farm? It's very hard for an Irish breeder to ask a big number to UK like coming over, whereas if they're bidding it out and the sales are in, then they're getting their true value. The other part is, for the society sales point of view, if that does start happening, it could be taking a lot of the better animals out of it. And if you're taking the better animals over the sale, you're risking bringing less people out and the overall standard dropping.
It's important to point out that there's no difference in the Northern Ireland trade, because the Northern Ireland trade obviously is an important trade for Southern bull sales as well, but there's no difference there. They can still purchase bulls in the south and move them north on the evening of the sale, yeah?
Yeah, so that's the exact same. So as I mentioned, it'll vary between society and which ones affect more. I suppose the Charley breed would have a lot of exports from their premier sale, but a lot of them would be Northern Ireland they'd be going to, and the number of mainland UK would be less, whereas, as I mentioned, the limousine would be quite high for that.
Have you spoke to any breed secretaries? Have you spoke to any of those about what they're doing, or are they going to try and get a change, or have they been speaking to anybody?
Yeah, so I've been speaking to the three main ones there that I mentioned, limousine, Charley and Smental, which would be most affected. They're against it, of course. They're not happy. It's definitely going to have some effect on trade. To what degree is unknown yet. And definitely they're looking about trying to get a change. It's a UK rule, but the way they have to do it is they need to come at it as a united front from all the breed societies together, even the Predator Council going at that, and I think they're kind of making contact about that as well.
I know it's not just pedigrees. I was speaking to Jerry Kennellan during the week from Elfin Martin, and they have quite a large heifer sale coming up, and he would have always had some UK customers at that sale, and he's obviously very concerned as well in terms of that high-end market, that he's afraid that they won't buy them, because basically he would have been exporting them shortly after the sale, and it's not going to suit them to hold them for 40 days. So it's obviously of concern as well. There was 6,000 cattle went to the UK last year, went to Great Britain, I should say, up from 5,500 the year before. So it's obviously a concern there as well.
Without a doubt, and I suppose a lot of the breed societies highlighted that to me as well. That's the backbone of the trade. They need a good commercial trade to drive the pedigree sales. And especially, like you mentioned about the good quality heifers, and that's at normal marks, but even the exceptional show calf heifer that had gone across, they're making this 5,000 to 8,000 euro mark, which has been flying the last few years. That a lot of that is reliant on mainland UK buyers as well. So it'd be best for everyone if a change or something else was brought in.
Okay, Shane, thanks very much. People can follow this story on farmersjournal.ie, or I know you'll be covering it in next week's paper edition. Thanks, Shane.
Losing UK buyers would certainly be a blow to pedigree breeders. But from a disappointment to a near miss, our woman of the people, Katrina Kinsler, caught up with a fellow Wexford native this week, tillage farmer James Keogh. He's been pulling tug-of-war for over 40 years.
And how did you come to get nominated for the world's greatest athlete?
One friend, the Irish Tug of War Association, put in my name, like, but he had a poem before he told me.
So was it a bit of a shock for you?
It was, yeah, because I'm one that don't be into publicity at all.
So how did you feel when you found out you had been nominated?
Yeah, I was thought somebody phoned me like for a while.
So you didn't actually fully believe that this was it was actually true, you had been nominated for the World's
Cup? Yeah, sure. I was driving along in the title. I had the Bluetooth, so I wasn't hearing them correctly. So you put name forward for into TWIF, you see, the Tug of War International Federation.
Okay.
And then they had a contest in that, so my name went forward as the nominee then from TWIF into the World Games, like.
And when you got selected to represent Ireland and obviously your local club, how did it actually feel then when the news sank in you had actually been nominated? You must have been delighted.
Oh, me, I wouldn't be. If it was some of the other ways, they might have been jumping out.
You took it in your stride.
I didn't think to go forward anyway, you know, from TWIF. We see each sport in the World Games put forward a nominee, like. So I got nominated for the Tug of War, like, sport in the World Games, like.
And what kind of support did you receive then once people got wind of your nomination and they had to vote for you? what type of support did you receive?
A fair bit of support now around the country and other parts of the world, like even as far as American, South African place, you know, all them countries are in tug of war. Like,
it must have been a bit of a lift for the community in the lockdown, just something different and something a little bit exciting.
Oh, definitely got a bit of a lift. I think was just one of her nieces and nephews and Martina Farrell, and they got behind it. Like, if that's what it went nowhere, because I wouldn't be the one going looking for the publicity. They were responsible for getting the support.
A pity about the final result, but great to see one of our own recognised on such a wide stage. Join us after the break, where we'll be talking bogs and blackgrass.
Prices for dairy beef calves up €50 per head. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
Calf prices reach over €400 per head. Calls for minimum €10,000 reps payment. Scramble for green star places with some courses booked out in 6 minutes. And we have the latest roundup of prices in our 4 pages of Mart coverage.
Plus, it's child's play in Irish Country Living this week with 4 pages of colouring, puzzles and a story competition inside this week's Irish Farmer's Journal, on sale now.
Welcome back. As part of its climate commitments, Bord na Mona has unveiled plans to rewet thousands of acres of bogs. Our self-confessed bogs and corncrake specialist, Amy Ford, sat down with the semi-state body to find out more.
We're joined now by Mark McCorry from Bord na Mona, and Mark's going to chat about rewetting of Bord na Mona land. I suppose, Mark, first up, is Bord na Mona going to hold consultations with landowners who are beside these cutaway bogs for rewetting about their future plans?
Thanks, Amy. Yes, we will. We will be holding extensive consultations. So at the moment, we're going through a formal consultation process in relation to the 19 bogs that we have selected for this year in relation to the PCAS, the Peatlands Climate Action Scheme. And that's part of our obligations in relation to our IPC licenses. All of this is required under our IPC licenses. So there will be a formal consultation. We have a community liaison officer. We have emails set up. We have a website, and you know, neighbours can contact us through those different options. But we see this as only really the start of the engagement. We expect there will be ongoing and continued engagement through this process, and we're always going to be happy to chat. And hopefully, once we are post-COVID, we'll be able to meet up. But during this formal process, look, we will be able to, talk to people, and you know, the option is to meet remotely if that is an option for some people.
Perfect, Mark. And then I suppose, what are the actions that Bord na Mona will be carrying out on these lands as part of rewetting? So there's obviously drain blocking as part of that. What will these bogs look like then as well?
Yes, you're correct. We'll be doing extensive drain blocking. We'll be also looking at reprofiling and bunding. These are minor changes to the surface of the bog. And we'll also be looking at hydrological management on our pump bogs and looking to reduce pumping where possible. But we won't be blocking marginal drains, and we won't be blocking any drains that take water into the bog and where water kind of flows through our bogs. So we have to be very careful and conscious about what we do that may affect adjacent land. And we're also going to be carrying out hydrological assessments to look at potential impacts. And we will be amending our rehabilitation plans if these assessments flag that there could be potential impacts. So we're very conscious we're not living in a bubble, like we're part of a wider landscape. And we want to make sure that whatever we do, you know, we can compromise to make sure that we can derive all the benefits of this rewetting while making sure we're not going to have unintended impacts on adjacent land. And there's huge benefits for what we're planning to do. And you know, when I talk about rewetting, I'm really talking about creating soggy conditions. We don't want to create deeper water where possible. We want to get emergent vegetation, you know, so ground that you probably would need your Wellingtons to walk through, to tiptoe through, but it's not going to be too wet. And we think, you know, that's going to develop these vegetation, these boggy vegetation communities, you know, that will, you know, be great for climate action. Okay. And in time, in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we'll see these bog areas of bog cotton and you know, with fantastic moss cover, and that's going to be fantastic for climate action. It's also going to be fantastic for biodiversity. And when I talk about climate action, it's really about trying to reduce carbon emissions from these areas. And when they're dry, they're going to be emitting carbon. We know if we wet them, we reduce those carbon emissions. And in time, we can accelerate the trajectory of these areas towards a naturally functioning peatland and wetland systems. And in time, they may, our parts of them may turn to carbon sinks again.
And I suppose in a snapshot, what you're saying there, Mark, like, farmers shouldn't be worried about their land being flooded as a result of this process.
No, we're being very careful. We have 40 years of experience of doing this this type of rewetting. We have lots of examples of where we have rewetted bogs in the past very successfully. But we, you know, we've avoided blocking the marginal drains, so we've avoided having any negative impacts on adjacent land. So definitely want to put, you know, farmers' minds at rest. We really want to be able to try to reassure them. Like, we want to take all the measures that we can to prevent negative impacts, and where we have to adapt our plans, we will. We will be carrying out our hydrological assessments, and you know, we're going to be very cautious, you know, about you know, what we do, and, you know, compromising where we have to.
And there is a full detailed report on those proposals in this week's paper, so be sure to pick up a copy. And finally, last but certainly not least, we'll hear from Stephen Robb. Stephen is part of a team heading up a new year-long project focused on the dangerous tillage weed known as blackgrass. He spoke to an expert in the field to find out what it is and what it means for the sector.
Stephen Robb here with the Irish Farmers Journal. So the Farmers Journal and Chagas have this week launched a new year-long series focusing on the tillage weed, blackgrass. So blackgrass is becoming a major problem in Ireland's tillage fields, and it cannot be ignored any longer. So to tell me a little bit more about the weed and a little bit more about what's coming up throughout the year, I'm joined by Jimmy Staples, ECT, or Enable Conservation Tillage Project Advisor with Chagas. Jimmy, I suppose some of our listeners here, they're not involved in tillage at all, and indeed some of our tillage listeners mightn't even know what blackgrass is. So just explain to listeners, what is blackgrass and why is it a problem?
Hi, Stephen. Yeah, well, I suppose part of it's in the name. It's a grass weed that's a particular problem in cereal crops. So what you have is it's can be found all over Europe, really. I would describe it as a tall, competitive grass weed, which will compete ferociously with your crops of winter wheat and winter barley. It's a big yield robber. A low number of plants will lead to a big yield drop, and it can be particularly hard to manage, as it's prone to developing herbicide resistance to a number of different of the active ingredients that we're using in this country and throughout Europe and the world.
So the main problem with this weed, above many of the other weeds which we're commonly, you know, used to hearing about, like wild oats and so on and so forth, is that it will smother cereals and rob yield. That's the problem.
Yeah, basically. So it's quite distinctive. It's very, I suppose, aggressive in its growth habit. It'll tiller quite vigorously, and it produces a huge amount of seed. One head alone could produce 100 seeds, and usually would be expect to have a 60% viability in those seeds. So, yeah, that's right. So if you had just 12 plants per meter squared, you're looking at a 5% yield reduction. But I suppose the big challenge with it is it produces so much seed. If you had just take one head, will produce maybe 100 seeds. And if you had one plant with an average of say 10 heads, you're looking at 1,000 seeds. So if you were to put that across 1 hectare, if you had one plant per meter squared across 1 hectare, that's 10 million seeds returned. You probably look at maybe a 60% viability. So all of a sudden on that hectare, you have 6 million seeds returned to the seed bank. So you can sort of see how quickly it can become a big problem and really affect the yield and the viability of growing crops in a field. I think blackgrass has been here for quite a long time. There is native blackgrass which has been around, but from the best of my knowledge, I think it's being controlled. Whereas now we're coming across strains which aren't being controlled by herbicides. So a lot of it, I think, has been unfortunately has been introduced from the UK, whether it be on machinery or in straw or potentially in seed. So as it's creeping in, then it's starting to get maybe a foothold here, and then I suppose maybe some of the practices we've been doing haven't really helped. People weren't aware of what it is. A lot of the cases I'm coming across, people aren't actually aware of the weed they're looking at, and 2 or 3 years go by, and all of a sudden they have a big problem, and they only try and act on it then. So that's part of the problem, I suppose. We have a responsibility to try and educate people and try and make people aware of what the issues are, of what blackgrass is, and how you go about controlling it. I suppose that's really it. I suppose if you look to the UK, they have big problems over there, and a lot of it is down to, I suppose, a lot of winter cereals, a lot of winter cropping, maybe not a lot of earlier sowing, which sort of feeds into blackgrass likes to germinate that August, September, early October period. So a lot of the earlier sowing is leading to problems as well. Just poor rotations, I suppose, on top of that as well. So there's a lot of things that we've been doing, I suppose, which isn't helping, which isn't helping to control it, and which is leading it to increase in its numbers.
So in a sense, what has happened over in the UK, and particularly in England, has the potential to happen here. Maybe the difference is that it would happen a lot quicker over here because we are already dealing with those resistant varieties.
Yeah, possibly so. Yeah, but I suppose that potential is there. But I think we're in a good position. Like, we know what it is. We know it's here. We know what controls and what doesn't control it, you know. So we try and look at it from that point of view. I know we need to get that message out there that it's here and that it can become a big issue. But I think we're in a decent position. Whereas if we can act quick enough, we can get on top of it before it becomes an issue.
And are we sure that the strains or the populations that are present in Ireland now are resistant, or is there testing going on at the moment, or what's happening?
Yeah, we have come across, like, there's plenty of evidence from the field, from farmers' own experiences, to show that they're not getting control with certain herbicides. But we're also, as part of the project now, we've taken in a number of populations from across the country that were submitted by farmers and bioagronomists, and we're in the process of testing them at the moment. We did some preliminary work in 2020 on some of the populations that we had. And look, there was a mix. Like I say, it was preliminary work. You couldn't take it for granted, but there was a mix of resistance. There was resistance to your ALS, the resistance to your ACCAs, there was resistance to both, and there was resistance to neither. So there's a big variation in the populations that are out there. Hopefully the 20 or 30 odd populations that we have that we're testing this year will give us more of an insight into what's actually happening out in the fields, and what the level of resistance is like, and what their resistance to, you know, what actives they're resistant to as well.
So in this week's Irish Farmers Journal, we're launching the series, and we also carry an article as to where you have found or where you have confirmed cases of blackgrass. Just give us a flavour, Jimmy, of where the hotspots for blackgrass are in Ireland.
The biggest populations that we've found, or the largest number of cases, I suppose, per county, you probably relate to North Dublin and Cork seem to be the biggest hotspots. And then we have a large number of cases in Meath, Kildare, Tipperary as well. So I think they would be the main ones. But unfortunately, what we have done is we found it in at least one case in nearly every tillage county, if you want to refer to them that way. Of the main counties that have a tillage industry, like, so I think Wicklow and Donegal are the two counties where we haven't come across to date, but unfortunately it's in the majority of other counties that you would think of as arable counties.
Okay, so I suppose the series is going to run throughout the year with an article or two every month. Jimmy, I suppose in terms of what our listeners and readers would expect to be covered, just give us a flavour of what's coming up throughout the year.
Yeah, so I really want to get across all the main things that people need to watch out for and consider when they're looking at grass, looking at black grass. Or we'll discuss how to go about identifying it. You know, what its main characteristics of the biology of it, what to look out for. You know, a lot of that will feed into once you know and understand the plant, then you can get a handle on how to actually control it. So we'll run through you know, what your options are from a control point of view. Integrated pest management is obviously going to be the key thing in that. So we'll discuss herbicide resistance, what we found in the ECT project, what populations are resistant to and what they're not resistant to. We'll look at we'll also look to the UK and see what their experiences are over there. And hopefully at the end of the year we'll have a better idea on what's actually going on in this country as well, and we'll have a report on that too. So.
Okay, Jimmy, great. Look, there's obviously going to be a lot more coverage and discussions to be had around blackgrass throughout the coming year, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again very soon.
No problem, Stephen. Thanks for your time.
And I'm sure we won't be the last time we hear from Stephen on the subject. But that's all we have time for this week. Be sure to pick up a copy of the paper on sale from Thursday. Thanks for joining me. My sound engineer was Claire Nash. Till next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.